This past January marked the 150th anniversary of Edith Wharton's birth. She wrote over 40 books in 40 years and was the first woman to win a Pulitzer Prize and a full membership to the Academy of Arts and Sciences. And her work continues to influence artistic imaginations today, from Cecily von Ziegesar's Gossip Girl series to PBS's turn-of-the-century drama Downton Abbey. Edith Wharton's home, The Mount in Lenox, Massachusetts, is hosting a series of literary and design events in honor of the anniversary. And here today to discuss her life and work are Susan Whistler, executive director of The Mount, and fiction writer and Wharton scholar Roxana Robinson. I'm very pleased to welcome them to our show today.
Thanks. It's nice to be here.
And Roxana, you have been here to talk, I think, about, every one of your novels, right? Cost, Sweetwater, A Perfect Stranger. Can we detect the influence of Wharton in those works?
Wharton is a huge influence on my writing. It's hard to explain exactly how, but I think that reading her as a young girl, I was really astonished by her capacity for elegance and a kind of moral exigence. That's what really struck me. She really writes about morality. And also,
in a very modern way, I thought, you know, she's not the stodgy writer of 100 years ago.
Not at all. She's not about manners. She's interested in something much more serious.
Susan, when did you first read her?
Oh, I read Ethan Frome in high school, certainly, along with
we all had
everyone
to.
Else, yes. And
I hated it at the time. It was only later that I realized it was a great book.
I had the same experience. I reread it a couple of years ago and was just stunned by it. But I would say I became sort of deeply immersed in the Wharton literature when I became associated with The Mount back in 2001. And then, you know, have read more and more of her as the years go by.
She was mostly self-educated. How did she develop an interest in writing and literature?
She was given the free run of her father's library, and he was a very bookish, learned man, very modest and quiet, but loved great books. And so Edith was just turned loose. Her mother wouldn't let her read fiction. That was considered risky. But she read great philosophy and history, and she learned German and French. I think Italian.
Italian, also, yes.
So she was very learned herself. I wouldn't call her exactly self-educated. It was just more
she didn't go to university.
She did not.
Which is, today, she definitely would have done that, probably would have taken some kind of entered some program. But she entered the Henry James program? Was he her major mentor?
I wouldn't say that exactly. She certainly admired him. She didn't really get to know him until she had really made a name for herself. He certainly advised her. He said, use New York. That's your subject. And that was a great piece of advice.
And she did.
And she did.
Was she accepted into the established literary circles of the time?
Well, go ahead, Roxana.
Yes. Yeah, she was. She lived in two worlds. Until she got divorced, and really until The House of Mirth came out, she lived in a social world where there weren't many writers.
Had she married into that social world?
No, she was born into it. Mm-hmm. Both her mother's and her father's family were very old New York families, and she married somebody from the same circle. So she lived a very social life that didn't contain writers, and her writing world was kind of secret until she brought out her first novel and then The House of Mirth, which came out in 1905, and that all of a sudden she was a national celebrity.
And what's so interesting about The House of Mirth is she was both a critical success and a popular success. And House of Mirth was actually serialized first, and people would line up around the block when the next issue was to be issued. And it was issued, published as a hardback in October. And by December 31, it was by far and away the best-selling novel of the year.
And why do you think that is? Did people recognize the country in this work? Was there something that particularly resonated in it?
It's a great book, and so it's impossible to capture everything in it. But I think there are lots of elements that draw people. I mean, part of it is the Wheel of Fate. So here's a beautiful, accomplished, polished, elegant young woman who ends up in the most terrible kind of failure that can happen to anyone, and she's a master observer. And so on the other hand, it was a way for everyone in the country to catch a glimpse of high society. But it was also, it's about personal loss and making terrible choices. And everyone can identify with Lily Bart. So it has so many reasons for admirers.
Well, how did her personal life influence her work, Susan?
Well, again, she was a very keen observer of New York society. So I think her early years, she just spent time amassing information and observations and circumstances and relationships.
An Age of Innocence, maybe even more a reflection of that, don't you think?
Yes, I would think so. And Age of Innocence is actually, a gentler novel than The House of Mirth. And interestingly enough, she wrote it after the war and after she'd been in Paris and away from this country. And I think it was sort of a look back to things that she was damning necessarily or possibly judging in The House of Mirth and then talking about how there are reasons why societies exist and why people make the choices that they do.
She wrote it from a male viewpoint, didn't she?
Well, there's a male protagonist, mm-hmm. Yeah. But the two books, as Susan says, are written 15 years apart. And when she wrote The House of Mirth, she herself was trapped in that society, and she saw it as a place that was really deadly. When, in 1920 or 21, when she wrote The Age of Innocence, she was long out of it. She was no longer trapped in that unhappy marriage. She was living in a country that she loved among people who loved and admired her. So her whole position was very different.
Well, it had to be very daring to get a divorce at that time, especially somebody who was living a privileged life.
I think it was, and I think it was a decision that she agonized over. And a lot of her short stories talk about women who are divorced and who are making the journey back to the United States for the first time, and how will they be received or rejected. And so I think she worked out a lot of her own insecurities through her short stories.
How did her family react to her literary career? Were they proud of her, or were they concerned that she was always about to create another scandal?
Well, it wasn't another scandal. I mean, she
did write a scandalous book. She wrote erotica.
Oh, that was never published.
Yeah.
They didn't. I'm sure her parents did not know about Beatrix Palmato. So The House of Mirth was, I mean, her mother was a very narrow-minded, intolerant woman who was never particularly supportive of Edith. But she did, she was the person who first published Edith's poetry.
Poems.
So she was proud in a certain way.
Well, Edith was a woman writer at a time when that was a rarity, but not totally unknown. There have been some great women writers mm-hmm. before her. But not in this country.
Well, you could say Harriet Beecher Stowe was a great woman writer, my great-great-aunt. But the thing is that there were a lot of women writers, and there were a lot of popular women writers. So that was not so extraordinary. There are people whose names none of us know who wrote extremely commercially successful novels. But she was the first great, great novelist.
So she divorced and then moved to France as a way of getting away from all the judgmental people who might have considered what she had done terrible?
Well, she partly moved to France because she needed to get a divorce in France, because in France a divorce was much more discreet. You didn't have to show proof in court in France of adultery, which you did in America. So that was one reason. She also loved France. She'd always loved France. She'd lived there as a child. She and Teddy had gotten places there earlier. But yes, it was partly to get away from the judgment of society.
My guests are Roxana Robinson and Susan Whistler. We're talking about Edith Wharton, whose 150th anniversary was this past January. Jonathan Franzen recently wrote a controversial essay about Wharton. What were your reactions to that piece, Susan?
Well, Roxana actually wrote a very eloquent response. I felt that his observations about it was basically a preface to a reissue of Wharton's three great novels, The Custom of the Country, Age of Innocence, and The House of Mirth. And I thought he made some quite insightful comments about those, in particular The Age of Innocence, where he talks about Madame Olenska and Newland Archer representing sort of different sides of Wharton herself. Roxana, I don't know what...
But then he also talked about the way she looked.
It was a very strange piece of writing, and much of the tone of his writing about Horton herself was very condescending and apathetic. So it was a very strange way for an essay to start out. He talks about her looks. He complains about her family, the way she travels. He says she has too much money, and her privilege makes her unsympathetic.
She wasn't good-looking enough, although she wrote about beautiful people.
That seemed to be very important to him. I don't know why it is.
Do you think that it reflects a wariness of ambitious women even today?
That's a really good question. You're probably right. You're probably right. I can't imagine an essay like that being written about a man.
But I can say the Balmain letters, the 140 letters that Wharton wrote to her governess and longtime companion, which are about to be issued in June. It's a very exciting new collection. They show a Wharton, these are very sort of freely written letters that I think Wharton never thought would be saved, and very personal letters. And you get a sense of Wharton who is very comfortable in her skin, very happy with the way she looks, actually quite supported by her family. And I think that it will raise a lot of questions about many of the assumptions even that Mr. Franson sort of bases some of his comments on.
Now, she was a big celebrity during her lifetime, and then she went into something of a decline. The only novel that most people were aware of was Ethan Frome, because it was taught in high schools. Why do you think we've suddenly seen this resurgence over the last 20, 30 years?
Well, I think it began probably with R.W.B. Lewis's biography, which was a Pulitzer Prize winner, and that brought her sort of back into the forefront of people's imaginations. And I think her books have so stood the test of time. And Roxana wrote a wonderful piece sort of explaining why, in particular, The House of Mirth is resonating today.
And we've seen films of Ethan Frome, Age of Innocence and House of Mirth, over the last 20 years. So she's suddenly become a source of inspiration for filmmakers, Martin Scorsese, Terrence Davis. These are pretty impressive. I can't remember who did Ethan Frome, but that was Liam Neeson and Patricia Arquette, I remember, starred in it. So is she back with us?
I think she's never left us. I think writers particularly have always loved Wharton because she's an incredibly intelligent and eloquent writer and so observant.
You talk about style?
Yes, her style. Her writing style is incredibly beautiful. And she's such an observer of human behavior and also has such compassion. So that in the end, these are not novels of manners. These are not just observations on social life. They're really deep observations about human nature.
And I would say that, you know, she's not known for her authority on landscape design and architecture, but her home, which she created in Lenox, Massachusetts, which is now open to the public, shows what an expert eye she had for beauty and graciousness and elegance.
What is the history of the Mount? How and when did Wharton purchase the estate?
Actually, the estate was purchased in 1902, and it was raw land at that point. It was farmland. And she, together with the architect Ogden Codman, designed basically meant to be a writer's retreat, not a home for entertaining large masses of people, but a very intimate home with only a couple of guest rooms. But it's quite gracious and elegant.
Although it has been threatened in recent years, hasn't it?
It faced, I would say, rather extreme financial difficulty in 2008, and we've managed to come back from that precipice and really turned the financial situation around.
By creating a literary center there?
We've greatly expanded our programming and our partnerships. We have opened up and used the property for all kinds of purposes. Visitation is back, and we're really using this 150th birthday anniversary as an opportunity to sort of heighten the visibility of not only Edith Wharton, but of this home that she created.
Are all of her books in print?
Nearly all, yes.
Roxanne, is the Mount's Teenage Essay Contest part of an initiative to educate young people about her? Oh,
Well, this is a writing competition, and it certainly is. And we also have free admission to people 18 and under every day. We're really trying to sort of broaden our base.
I mentioned at the beginning that everything from Gossip Girl to Downton Abbey can reflect some kind of influence of Edith Wharton. Do you see that?
Well, As I say, there are different aspects of Wharton that appeal to people. I mean, the Downton Abbey aspect is certainly a surge of nostalgia. Everybody is curious about the way people lived 100 years ago, if they lived in great splendor. So that's part of that. As to the other things, the movies and other kinds of novels, I think she just has captured something in the American life, the American character, that doesn't stop. She's an extraordinary resource.
You can find details about events at the Mount throughout the coming year, as well as the New York Society Library's exhibit on Wharton on our show page at WNYC.org. Was her home in Gramercy Park, is that still preserved?
No, it's not.
Alas. My thanks to both of you for coming by to talk about Edith Wharton, one of the greatest writers America's ever produced. Susan Whistler is executive director of The Mount. And Roxana Robinson is a wonderful novelist in her own right. She's also a Wharton scholar. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Leonard.
Thank you.